You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine Monday through Friday. We are here for you. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Sam Jam Packard, bringing you to a mailbag podcast. Lots of questions in the mailbag. Lots. We've got some serious questions about...
It's a junk-heavy mailbag, I'm going to tell you right now. We got a lot of junk.
There's a lot of junk.
Junk Nation was out tonight.
Yep. Yep, I think we're kind of in the middle of this little lull in the Celtics schedule, so we've got a lot of junk to get through. We're talking some serious stuff, you know, trades and whatnot, but mostly junk. We're talking about babysitters. We're talking about all sorts of craziness. It's fun. So, and it's all brought to you by our good friends at Draft. This is the Wednesday podcast, and it's a Draft Wednesday. That means I and Sam will be putting up drafts throughout the day where you can come and take our money. Although Jam experiencing a little bit of a turnaround.
Woo-hoo!
Big
Jam
winner.
Made some money.
Big
I came
winner.
In second place and I won $45.
That's a
I was
big
in,
haul.
I was in first place. I took Steph Curry on that night where he scored 50 or was close to 50.
Ugh.
And I only missed out by first place by 1 point. But you know what? Winning feels good. It's so opposite, like, the season with the Boston Celtics. I feel like with the Celtics, we've grown accustomed to all this winning, but not me in draft. Like, this is, like, it was the happiest moment of my weekend. It made my weekend.
Well, we'll tell everybody, if you haven't joined a draft yet, we'll tell you how to do it, how to come and take advantage of Sam's euphoria, because you know he's gonna put up like 20 drafts tomorrow to spend all of that $45 that he won. So come get that. We'll talk about that later in the show. Let's dive headfirst, like Scrooge McDuck, into a pile of gold coins into this #heavy mailbag. Rain and Jays. Let's start with the serious stuff, and go with the Rain and Jays hashtag. We ready for this?
I am.
All right. Start at the beginning, Choppa at Choppa JBB. Hey, guys, would you compare the before season start win-loss forecast you did in a podcast with what the Celtics have accomplished so far and how the rest of the season goes with half a season sample? Okay, so kind of comparing our forecast, which I did not go back and listen to what I had said. I feel like I said something around 56 wins. Think that sounds about right?
Yeah, I feel like we had similar thoughts on it, and we were kind of like, I think we were in like two games of each other.
Yeah, we were somewhere in that, mid-50s, I think. And I'll say this. When you set an expectation, when you've made a decision, like I made a decision about this is where I think the Celtics will go. So that's the baseline. Those are the expectations. I've set my expectations. Now the Celtics are exceeding my expectations, which means there's a natural kind of doubt to, is this real? Is it not? They're not doing what I thought they were, which means there's no way I could be wrong. They must be doing something extraordinary. It's no chance I misread what this team is doing. So then I naturally expect them to come back down to earth to match my expectations because that makes me feel better. So I will sit there and say, I don't think that they will go on a 76% winning pace moving forward. I think that they do come back down to earth a tiny bit at the very least. But That's because they haven't gone on their West Coast trip yet. That's always a tough road. They haven't played in Denver, the altitude. They haven't played in Golden State, which I know they've won in the past, but that's still a hard place to play. They've got to play in Houston, two teams they've beaten, which I'm sure they're both looking for revenge. So those will be tough games. I think there'll be a few more losses in there, but they've given themselves such a big lead that it's hard for me to say they won't win 60 games at this point, because they don't have to win a ton more games to get to 60.
Only 27. That's the thing, is that your reasoning and your logic make complete sense there. And I feel like I would make the same decision, but there's just like, I choose to be a sports optimist. And so I like to believe in that they could do it. And the reason I think so is because I feel like every year Brad Stevens' teams generally start playing better towards the second half of the season, especially like the final 20 games of the season. I just think there's a natural progression you've seen where he kind of figures things out. He goes from experimenting with a number of lineups earlier in the year and kind of figures out what he has and like what works together. So I think there's just a natural progression that we've seen in the past years in a Brad Stevens team. And then the second thing is the schedule. Like, I think they're going to have so much more rest than they had in this first part of the season. They're really not going to have an excuse to like lose in Denver or like lose in LA on a back-to-back. Like, they're so much more rested than they were over this stretch that those two factors combined with just like my large sports optimism, and it's more fun to believe they can do win 65 games. Yeah, I said it. 65 games. I don't think they can do that. That's kind of like, once I said that, I immediately thought that was too much. 62 feels like a number that they could reach, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how much they're, because the strength of schedule definitely gets a little bit harder, but it's going to be interesting until I can like see them. I don't know. They win a lot of kind of games that they shouldn't win. Especially the thing that sticks out is that Tito Rozier, or Indiana game. But I feel like they've still played kind of shitty basketball, but with how good their defense is, they're going to be in a lot of games, and they have Kyrie Irving, who's one of the best fourth quarter scorers, and they have the best defense in the league so far. So that's the way you win basketball games, is like, you can keep it close. Even when you're not shooting well, you're going to keep it close. You're going to be in a lot of games. And because they're so kind of, they have that kind of ISO scoring and the talent you need in the fourth quarter, plus that defense, I don't think 60 games is unreasonable.
No,
I just completely talked myself back in.
Okay, so they're 33-10. They need to go 27-12 the rest of the way. That's very, very feasible.
It's kind of crazy to like think that they would lose 12 more games.
It is, and you know they haven't lost 12 games yet, and they're just a tick more than halfway through their season. So even if we allow for some slippage and you say, okay, they'll lose a couple more games, they'll lose a little bit of a higher percentage, 60 wins is right there. It's right within reach. And you look at it before the season or even after game one, Hayward goes down, you sit there and you say, I even with Hayward, I didn't expect a 60-win season. And maybe... And I've had this discussion. I had this discussion on... I was on the podcast with Anna Horford, which you should go listen to.
Shout out to Anna Horford. It's her birthday today.
It's her birthday. Happy birthday, Anna. And we should be getting her on the show tomorrow. Actually, tease ahead to tomorrow. It's part of a back-to-back thing. I did her podcast. It's one of her first podcasts. She's going to come on our podcast, a little back-to-back thing. So
I get to ask her about her brother's gorgeous eyes?
We may have to restrict that.
No, I feel like that needs to be a topic. That's my one rule.
We'll see.
But people want to hear it.
part of my take, you want to hear it. Was that if Gordon Hayward didn't get hurt and he was healthy, I don't even know if they are 33-10 right now. It's so hard to say, because part of why they're 33-10 is because Al and Kyrie got to do their thing, and Jason Tatum has been so great playing a strict third fiddle, very happy third fiddle, that it's worked. And I don't know what it's weird to say it, but maybe their record isn't quite this good, because it just would have been a little bit more of an adjustment period that, and Tatum would be playing a different role off the bench. I mean, maybe they still win 30 games, but it's hard to say. I'll just leave it at this. it's amazing to me that they're still in the contention to be a 60-win team. I didn't expect it, but it's certainly right there for the taking. And the fact that this Boston Celtics team could go win 60 games is an amazing testament to all of the hard work that those guys are doing, how good Al Horford has been, how good Kyrie has been, how good Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Terry Rozier, and Marcus Smart. All of those guys have been great. Guys off the bench have been great. Shane Larkin has made an impact. Daniel Tice has made an impact. Shimmy Ogilvie has made an impact. And then, of course, Brad Stevens and that coaching staff tying it all together. Amazing work. So I will say that I don't expect them to win 76.5% of their games moving forward, but they certainly can win enough to get either 260 games or at like 58, 59. So they're right there, which will probably be good enough to take the top seed, because right now their closest competition is the Toronto Raptors at 28-10. And for Toronto to catch the Celtics, they have to play better than their pace. They have to maintain their current pace to get to 59 wins, which is about 73% of their wins. So they have to get a tiny bit better. The Cavaliers need to win 80% of their remaining games to get to 60 wins. So that top seed is right there for the Celtics taking.
The interesting thing about the Raptors is they're playing great basketball, and the Celtics have only played them once in kind of that crazy game where DeRozan missed at the buzzer. But those three games could mean a lot, especially I feel like the Celtics have had trouble against the Raptors, or it's been a pretty kind of even match. But they're a good team. It was wild to see Kyle Lowry really fell crazy hard last night, and that injury was insane. But I'm curious to see how the Celtics match up against them. I don't know. They always feel like a tough team to me. But I don't know. I think the Celtics are better. And as you were talking, I was just imagining you're talking about Gordon Hayward and if the team would win as much. And I was just thinking of the starting lineup of Kyrie, Jaylen, Gordon Hayward, Tatum, and Horford. And I feel like those guys would have figured it out. A lot of faith that they might not have the same total, but they could have, who knows? They could have had 40 wins at this point.
They very, very well could be possible. You never know.
Here's the wild thing. Do you think the Celtics are favored next season, basically not knowing I guess the major roster changes that can happen, but just projecting in the season when Gordon Hayden returns, do you think the Celtics would be title contenders?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
I think they can beat the Warriors at that point. I don't even know what the Warriors will be, and we'll have a season more of hot takes, but I think the Celtics would be favorite to win the championship. That's Boston homerism. That's some green fucking goggles, but I believe it. I said
it. That's a whole lot of green Kool-Aid. But look, I would say, assuming no huge major changes, that it's probably Golden State 1, and then Boston, and depending on what Houston does, tied for second, not too far behind, but...
Well, it all depends on where LeBron goes. LeBron goes to Houston, that changes everything.
That changes everything, yeah. So we'll see. I think that they have a very strong chance next year with Gordon Hayward to be amongst the top two or three teams. Moving on. A young fella by the name of @SamSheehan.
Sammy Sheehan. Back-to-back pod shout-outs.
Yeah, responding to yesterday's... I don't know if you call it a shout out. I think he sees it as an own, but
he owned himself, man. He owned himself. He says, "Watch the videotape."
A guy who's clearly me in a Groucho Marx glasses and mustache. So, sure, a guy in Sam Sheehan disguise. Jay and Jam went after a handsome blogger, Sam Sheehan, over him hating on Jason Tatum during the draft process. Yeah, I think it's fair to say his big first year has been changes to his game. Can you think of another draftee changing his game, specifically the way he scores the ball, as much between college and his rookie season as Jason Tatum? Between college and a rookie, I'm struggling to find an answer.
The first thing that came to my idea was Kawhi learning how to shoot, because he was just a defensive superstar and changed his game in becoming more of a scorer. But that was not in the first season. That's not the immediate first year thing. That was a Kawhi development over a number of years.
That was going to be my choice. Damn it. I thought I was going to have this awesome choice that would have rocked everybody's world. And you guys had the same goddamn choice. But it's the exact same thing. Yeah, he didn't do it right away. So, I mean, who came out right away and was like, oh, geez, he's just not exactly what he was in college at all and is much better? I can't think of one.
I can't think of – I can think of like Hashim Thabeet or Anthony Bennett who are much worse, but
– Right. You go to the other way. But, I mean, people are bringing in like Markel Fultz, which is hilarious, going the other way. And people are –
We still don't know why he hasn't played – like he's only played three games. We just don't know what's going on with him. That's wild.
I don't know. That Philly – I don't get it. I don't get it. But I'm not going on to a Philly rant because – I'm just not. We don't need that. You all know what I want to say, and there's no need to repeat myself. So, yeah, I can't think of another draftee that changed his offense or his offense was so visibly different, I guess, other than people have suggested Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's numbers, I remember last year, the previous before Jaylen Brown was drafted, we're sitting here on the podcast and Jay kept bringing up the advanced statistics and he can't shoot and blah, blah, blah. And he seems to be doing all right, but nothing to this degree. I can't think of any.
Yeah. I don't like, to me, I didn't watch a lot of college basketball. It's never something I've done. So it doesn't like Jason Tatum doesn't strike me as like a huge change from what he did in college, just because I saw him as a guy who could shoot and do like one-on-one moves, but I don't know. I didn't watch that much, so I don't know. You're right. There's no specific person who comes to mind. So maybe Sammy Sheehan just got us back for making fun of him because asking an impossible question.
I will say just this in defense. I know he's joking around. He's having fun with it, and we like to bust his balls. But people are going to be wrong about shit all the time, and like I thought Embiid was going to be a bust coming out of college. I didn't like some of the things that I saw, and it wasn't even injuries. It wasn't even like the injuries started to play into it, but there were things that I just didn't like, and I thought I don't know. And here he is. When he's healthy, he's great. And so there, people are going to have bad takes. When you just go out and give take after take after take, some of them are going to be bad. You know, maybe not Nick Wright bad, but bad.
So you just have to acknowledge when you have bad takes and just be willing to admit that you have bad takes. And then that will make you like, if you know you're going to be wrong, I guess some people that leads to some people just be like making the hottest takes. But sometimes hot takes are fun. I feel like I'm like solid 50-50 hot take to normal take.
Well, I would say I will go to and quote the great Smooth Jimmy Apollo from The Simpsons. When you're right 52% of the time, you're wrong 48% of the time. So that's how we live our lives online. And yeah, so shouts to Sammy Shee. You know, so what? He was dead wrong on Tatum, but so were a lot of people.
Yeah, but we got it on video, and that's what makes it
yes,
funny.
Yes, yes. He was very, very visibly shaken when that was announced, and it's very, very funny. I am wrong probably more than 48% of the time when I'm on draft. Chances are I've overthunk my draft, and instead of taking the right guy, I end up drafting a matchup that I think is going to, you know, like I look at a guy's revenge game or something like that, or a guy going up against a bad team, and I don't think about, oh, maybe he won't play in the third quarter or whatever. So I keep giving away a lot of money on draft. So that's probably going to play into why your chances of winning on draft are about 80% better than on salary cap sites. It's my favorite fantasy site because it's just a lot of fun. You're not going to get crushed by the pros. It's certainly not going to get crushed by me, and generally not by Sam Packard. And more than a million people have already downloaded drafts, so you should be one of them too. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now, be done in under 5 minutes, get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling up all the time, so you can join basically whenever you want. And now, if you haven't been one of the players, there's a lot of people have joined, and we really appreciate you joining. Everybody has had a very positive experience. However, if for some reason you do not love it, Draft is offering Locked On Celtics listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. So you can play. If you don't like it, you can go to their customer service. They will hook you up. You don't have to worry about it. It's kind of risk-free. So go sign up, download the Draft app, or go to draft.com. Use the promo code LOCELTICS. LOCELTICS when you make the first deposit, and you will get a free entry into a real money draft. So again, download the Draft app or go to draft.com, sign up, insert the promo code LOCELTICS when you make your first deposit, and you will get a free entry into a real money draft. And again, a money back guarantee of up to $100. So just go search Draft in your app store, go to draft.com, play for free right now with LOCELTICS.
And today is a draft Wednesday, so if you just like message me, I'll be sending up drafts. I just won $45. That means I have that much in credit. I'm willing to spend it all on a draft Wednesday. If you just want to keep like drafting all day, I'll do that. Because so if you're a new user, use promo code LOCELTICS, get that $3 entry, and I'll just keep drafting because it's just a lot of fun. I enjoy the snake draft. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's better than the auction sites.
I agree. I completely agree.
Crazy thing about the auction site is like they say like you can you're not going to get beat by the pros, but the pros is like dudes who run like algorithms and analyze like DraftKings and like those daily fantasy stuff. It's wild. You have no chance there. Take my money instead.
No. And the snake draft really is the great thing because you don't have 20 people in a draft and everybody's got Kevin Durant and it's some random little thing. Once Kevin Durant's off the table, it's gone. So you really have a really good shot.
It helps you pick what league pass game you're going to watch after the Celtics. Like it's it really directs your life in a good way.
Let's get back to the Rain and Jays hashtag here on.
Have we only gone through one question so far?
Two.
Oh, two. Nice.
Yes. So let's
better efficiency.
We're really going to plow through this. This is a 4-hour podcast coming. All right, Jonathan Pedro, do you think Ainge and Hayward know the struggle they're putting everyone through with those tweets today? Oh God. These guys went out there, and there was a tweet of Gordon Hayward at a pool with no brace on, and he's clearly been swimming. He's out there. He's working out in the pool, and this is amazing. And everybody's losing their goddamn minds because it's Gordon Hayward without a brace. So, I think yes, they know, and yeah,
this was clearly intentional.
Gordon Hayward
knew what this would do.
Gordon Hayward retweeted it with the eyeballs. So they know damn well what they're doing. And you know what? I've become basically a Gordon Hayward truther. Every time something like this happens, I am more and more convinced that he's coming back to play this season at some point. I've been targeting the second round of the playoffs, and damn it, I'm still there. I'm much more convinced now than ever that he is coming back.
I mean, I have no reason to say you're crazy just because I know nothing about rehab schedules and what is a realistic timeline. So anything like you could just pretend you were a doctor on Twitter and like tweet out something about how you would expect him back at this time based on these two variables. And I would just be like, yeah, that's all right. So the fact that he's progressing and people seem to be impressed with his quick progression is a good sign to me, but I really have no fucking idea. But yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised at this point if he came back. It seems like just the way Danny Ainge is like announcing it, and Gordon Hayward's reaction, you would assume that's like what it's building to. I don't know like why they would tweet that if they were like they weren't as optimistic, but I don't know. Sometimes shit happens, so it's going to be interesting just because Gordon Hayward, as he recovers, is going to hit all of these milestones. It's like the first time we see him like practicing a little bit, it's going to be exciting. Then like the first time we see him do like hit a jumper, and then the time we see him dunk, and like the first time we see him in 5-on-5, there's going to be so many Gordon Hayward firsts in the Boston uniform. It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be amazing. Absolutely. Look, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Clean break, bones heal. They heal in like 6 to 8 weeks.
He's healing like a 6-year-old boy who's just like generating new bones every day.
He's a 27-year-old guy who's is he 27 or 26? He's in his complete human prime. His body's working at optimal efficiency. He is super, super rich. His trainer fucking lives with him. He is doing every possible thing to get better as fast as possible.
He's picking up marbles.
Marbles with his feet, people. marbles with his feet.
That's what I thought you could do. He can do anything.
He is just there. The Celtics have incorporated some weird secret video game to keep him involved. Like there is, I don't know how long it's going to take. And of course there's always the possibility of a setback, but this is the absolute perfect situation to heal as fast as possible, as quickly as possible from this injury. Bones heal, ligaments heal. It's just about strengthening once those things are done and getting his mind right. If I'm going down the rabbit. I'm a Hayward truther. He is coming back. Okay.
Movie. And the thing is, Stevens is he's a big believer in the growth mindset, and where you can kind of, if you believe something, if you like believe you have the capability through hard work to achieve, you will achieve that, like, more likely. So Brad Stevens is the perfect dojo master to kind of train Gordon Hayward through this and kind of mold his mind into believing, into his bones actually healing at a faster rate through the power of belief, the growth mindset. Yep, I'm in. Hayward truther.
All right, let's do it. All right, we're going to upper our efficiency with these tweets because we got a lot of random junk to get through. At Ivan Spitfire 93 asks, what are the chances we trade for Evans?
Tyreek the Freak. John Tomasi just wrote an article about it today, and I argued like that it was a very good deal. I mean, Tyreek is playing very good this year. I just don't think the Celtics need to add someone who like takes minutes away from Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier. I think both of those guys are pretty important right now. And yes, you'd wish you have a more efficient scorer. But I think, I don't know. I just don't think a guard makes the most sense. I feel like they need another kind of big or swing, someone who can, I don't even know if they need to add a piece. They're fucking 33-10. Like,
right. Right. I mean, I know.
Why change things?
They have the disabled player exception. Everybody's losing their minds over the disabled player exception. I think that is something that every GM will apply for and get just so they have it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they use it. Just because they have it to spend doesn't mean that they will spend it. Tyreek, sure, I'm not saying he wouldn't help. I'm not saying Lou Williams wouldn't help necessarily, but the Celtics have a deep roster, and I think that they'd rather get those guys the experience and see what they can do down the stretch. Get them battle tested.
They haven't been fully healthy until this London game coming up because Marcus Morris is coming off his minutes restriction. Like, they haven't actually had their full complement of players to be able to play the most game. Like, we don't even know what the team is yet.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I just don't see these short-term fixes. I've said it a million times. I think the disabled player exception is there just in case a couple of things happen. A guy, I keep bringing up Mario Hezonja, but a type like that, a young guy at the end of his rookie contract who might just get shipped off by a team that just says that it's not working. We just need the space. We'd rather just get him off the books or whatever. And the Celtics have an opportunity to get an extended look at a young guy to say maybe we want to give him another chance under our system. An athletic wing that can shoot is a type of guy that maybe we can make work and Brad Stevens can work some magic on. It's like taking a car that somebody decides they want to junk and rebuilding the engine. Or something that we didn't see coming, some sort of guy that might be available that in 3 weeks pulls a Kyrie and says, I'm out. I want to be traded. And people, oh, Jesus. And that guy just happens to fit. Then maybe the Celtics can come in, or maybe whatever. There are unforeseen circumstances, or they're just waiting to see what the buyout market might bring, and they can get somebody super, super cheap instead of a trade. Because if you're going to trade for Tyreek Evans, then you have to give up a draft pick, some sort of asset. And I don't think Danny Ainge is willing to give up an asset just for a short-term rental. Even if it's the Celtics' own first-round pick, why would you give up an end of first-round pick for a guy that may not be around next year? Just
you can't give a first round pick for Tyreek Evans. If it's a second round pick, then you consider it, just because that doesn't seem to matter as much. And Tyreek Evans is like a pretty good scorer and he's like 6'4". But yeah, I agree with you that it doesn't seem like trading an asset when you could just like get someone on the buyout market for that, especially when the team just is like, there's no reason that they don't have like glaring needs. Of course they like want bench scoring, but everyone wants bench scoring. And there's, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like there's the short-term fix. That's just not something this organization does. Like, everyone was upset they didn't get Serge Ibaka last year. It's just like, right. You know what? This team doesn't just like go for the big flashy thing. They were very kind of conscious about what their potential is, and I don't know if they believe they can win the title this year. So I don't know if they're just going to go for like something that just makes this team immediately better just for a rental. A rental is not something we've seen the Celtics really do.
Right. It doesn't fit. And first round picks are, even the end of the first round, they are more valuable now than they have been in maybe some recent years. Things are changing. So I just don't see it. A couple of related questions. At JB Atlantic Press, not claiming to be a genius or anything, but when we first got the DPE, I thought about signing Gerald Green. Did we pass up on GG? Who would you like to see them sign? So, as I just said, I've laid out my parameters for them signing somebody.
But shouts to Hot Chocolate, man.
Yeah,
Gerald Green's killing it. That's awesome to see.
He's lighting it up. I don't think he was ever in consideration, because think about the minutes that would not have gone to somebody if Gerald Green was in there. Again, they've got like Semi Ojeleye that they want to give minutes to and have him figure things out. Like, yeah, Gerald Green changed the Bull series last year. He did some good things, and he's doing some good things now in Houston. That's such a perfect system for him down there. I mean, it's designed for Gerald Green. Like, it's just go.
All he has to do is yam on people and shoot threes. Yeah, this is the perfect Gerald Green system.
Perfect. I joked when he came back. I said, man, if Gerald Green was drafted into this Rockets system, he would have been a Hall of Famer by now. It's perfect for him. So he's thriving. That's great. Good for him. I don't think the Celtics ever really wanted to mess with all of the depth that they have here. They would rather work it out and see what they have. I don't think that we're all caught up by this potentially 60-win team. I just don't think that Danny Ainge is looking at this year as year one of the finals push. There's still a lot that you have to get through. Not to mention Cleveland with Isaiah Thomas. They look pretty good with Isaiah Thomas. And Golden State, still Golden State. Celtics are in a position to do something right now if one of those two teams slips. But I just don't see them doing anything to push for this season. I think their focus, especially since they're right up against the tax line, I don't see them really spending money or messing with their depth.
No, and there's no reason to. You brought up Semi Ojeleye in that just now, and I just wanted to shout him out for the Brooklyn game. Something that I didn't think got enough attention, and I'm just realizing this now, is like I was at the Brooklyn game. Like, I could have asked Brad about this, or like asked Semi Ojeleye about this, and I just didn't. I was thinking about it then, but so I'm like, it didn't get enough attention. It was like, oh, you have some power to shine attention on this, Sam. You can improve this. But Semi Ojeleye didn't play the entire game until the fourth quarter, and then played the final 7 minutes in Brooklyn and just had huge stop after huge stop, and was one of the major reasons why the Celtics got out of there with a win. And just his ability to come off the bench and just provide very, very good defense when the Nets basically forced the Celtics to go small was – Aaron Baines was in foul trouble. Tice was tired as shit. Like, Semi Ojeleye just came in, started at center for the final 7 minutes of the game, and was amazing. Like – that's a reason why you just don't bring or like someone in, because you want someone like that to get minutes, to get experience, to try and like learn the game. And so I just wanted to give Semi Ojeleye his due. Like, that was a very impressive performance, and I just didn't think there was people talked about it enough. And I realize I'm taking my part of the blame in that.
Yeah. So let's just I think the Celtics are just going to roll with what they have. Let's see, Matt at Matthew P 1977, which Celtic is most likely not to be a Celtics out after the trade deadline? Also, John, how fun was it to podcast with Anna Orford? Let's start with the first part. I'm buying into the possibility of Marcus Morris not being here after the deadline. That's my hot take. It's the Dan Jerkhart special. And I think that the Celtics, with the potential eye on the tax and maybe opening things up for other players, especially maybe, who knows, if it makes sense for them financially, most likely I'd say it's Marcus Morris.
Yeah, that's logical. I don't want to get bogged down by that sports negativity, so I'm not going to answer the question.
Okay, fair enough. Second part of that question, how fun was it, the podcast with Anna Horford? It was great. I enjoyed it. And especially since, you know, we got to talk a little bit about other stuff, like our social media interactions and booze. And I actually,
yeah, I love that premise for a show, is just like drinking a different drink every show.
That's so great. It's so great.
I wish I thought of that.
And I'll be honest with you, I was kind of upset that I talked as much basketball as I had to on that show, because I was looking forward to talk about like just other things. But that's why I was on there. People get on me to get me around to talk about the Celtics. So that's what I do. In fact, I was watching the Celtics Friday night at a bar, and the bartender was starting to make small talk, and I immediately launched into a whole thing like I was on a podcast.
Jason Tatum is the greatest player I've ever seen.
And I was like, the bartender's just trying to make small talk, so just tone it down, Mr. Podcast, and just don't go into all of that. And then I was traveling this past weekend, and this woman next to me asked me, do you know basketball? And I was like, why, yes.
Do I?
I do. And she showed me, she was buying her husband. They had just moved to New York, and he's a big San Antonio fan, and she's buying him San Antonio Nets tickets for his birthday. She said, is this a good game to go to? And I started going into, well, Brooklyn's not that great this year, but they play hard, and their style is really and this, she's just like, I could see her eyes glaze over, and I was like, Brooklyn's
yeah, lady, get the tickets. Your husband are going to love them.
Brooklyn's a nice arena. It's going to be a fun game, and as long as he's a Spurs fan, it doesn't matter where he goes. She's like, okay, thanks. So, yeah. So, anyway, that's a long tangent to go off of. Anna Horford's great. She's fun. She's really she's a good kid. And so, yeah. We'll have her on tomorrow. So, where are we in this? Derek Clark, what other cities in the world could feasibly host an NBA game?
Mexico City already does it.
Yeah, I assume overseas. So I would say maybe like some Spain. I mean,
Barcelona. Paris could. Any place that has like a pretty good Euro team could feasibly host an NBA game. Like even basically any country in Europe with a pretty like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I feel like it's not. It's NBA is pretty international now, where they could probably come into any city and just sell it out, and it would be a relative success. It's just about like where the NBA wants to expand to. They could definitely go to China. They could definitely go to India. Like, I don't know. I feel like the NBA is it is pretty much an international game at this point.
I think when we say the key word is feasibly, like there are any major city in the world can host an NBA level game. So like if the Celtics and the Lakers wanted to play an exhibition game in, you know, someplace in India or, you know, in Africa.
And they do that. They have like the Africa game.
They do that. Yeah. But it's the middle of the summer. Feasibly in the middle of the schedule. Look at what it took to get a game in London. I think London is the closest international place. Maybe, I don't know exactly what the mileage is, but maybe you go to like Portugal or Spain or something, or like France, something similar. But you got Boston and Philly, two very East Coast teams, to go a very short, reasonable, you know, for lack of a better term, distance to go to play in London. So maybe the Heat and the Mavericks could go to Brazil in Rio and do something like that if you want to go further south. I don't know if the Trailblazers and Sacramento Kings can go to Japan. That's still a haul. That's a far flight. That's much further than you think you want to go. So I would say someplace on the western edge of Europe. So you're talking about like Lisbon, Portugal, Barcelona, Spain, you know, maybe somewhere in France, or like the northern part of South America. So I would say maybe Rio is the biggest city that you could feasibly, in the middle of a schedule, take a couple of days off and get teams from that area. So Miami and Dallas could go home afterwards and it not be just brutal, brutal.
No, you just pretty much covered the entire globe there, so I have no new information to add to that.
Great.
I agree
awesome.
With you 100-fold.
let's see. And speaking of international, at Mauricio Green BR, we have an international game. Who's the best overseas player you have seen play for the Celtics? So overseas, it's not necessarily international because...
So no Fab Melo or Vitor Favorini.
Well, yeah. I mean, does Al Horford count? He's Dominican. That's not overseas, but he's international, and it's not continental North America. I mean, that's...
I was thinking, is this more European? But that was just my first read of it. That's just what I like think of when I see international. But
yeah.
My initial answer was the best player I've seen is Jonas Cherebko.
Yeah.
I don't know who like, I was pretty young for the Dino Raja era.
I was going to say, Dino Raja is my other choice if we're going overseas, because Dino Raja had a stretch there. He was an all-star. So he had like a 2010 season.
I didn't realize he was an all-star. Then he's definitely the best player who's an international.
I'm pretty sure he had one all-star season. I say that, and then I'm immediately not confident that was completely true.
He was a borderline all-star.
he was a borderline all-star. He had an all-star level season, but he did not actually make the all-star team. I think what I'm saying is he should have been an all-star.
He damn right should have been.
In the year that he averaged 19.7 and 9.8 rebounds per game. But look, for his career in Boston, 16.5 points and 8.5 rebounds. He played pretty well. And like I said, that one year he was just a tick under 20-10. So he should have been an all-star. But he didn't have
clearly the best international player on the Celtics.
Yeah. I think, yeah. So that would be my choice, be Dino Raja. I remember being pissed that he didn't make the All-Star game.
So, I'm glad.
Let's see. Rain and Jays. We got one more, I think. Nope. Maybe not. Maybe I missed it. But, okay. Actually, this brings us into the Rain and Junk, because Sal used the Rain and Jays hashtag, opinion on Al Horford's English accent. and then somewhere in the Rain and Junk.
So bad.
It was bad.
It was like he's never spoken before in his life. It was like he had peanut butter in his mouth and he also didn't know how to speak.
Yeah. And let's see. Someone else asked the question, similar question, but
best and worst accents. In the Celtics videos, Terry Rozier had an amazing British accent.
He did
and
all right.
You shouldn't be surprised because everything that guy does on camera pops. That guy's the most – he's a winner. Yeah. Let me tell you, he's just got a winning personality. Every single segment at TD Garden where like it's like they interact like Kid Pictionary, fantastic. But every single segment like that, they recently did Aussie slang with Aaron Baines. That's a good segment. But every single time Terry's on screen, Tito lights it up. He's just like – he's a winning personality. So – I thought he definitely had the best British accent.
I would say so. Maybe Gordon Hayward. Al Horford's, though, was absolutely by far the worst.
It was garbage.
By far the worst. He sounded like D. Reynolds doing a bad Philly accent. Like, that's... No one does a worse Philly accent than D. Reynolds. So... all right, so we're...
I do a pretty bad Philly accent.
I mean, yeah, it's...
Go to Wawa, eat some hoagies.
God.
For the Eagles.
So now we are officially deep into
That's
Rain and Junk territory. That is, yeah. So let's just dive into this. At Cowan's Hondo, Beatles aside, what is the best band to come out of England? Thoughts?
I don't know. I've actually saw this like post come in and I've just been like thinking about it. And that's just like not the type of music I listen to, so I have no idea.
Yeah,
like,
it's
I
not
just
mine
really
either.
Drew a blank. The Rolling Stones are pretty good. They're good at music. I enjoy them, but like, I just don't have a strong enough opinion to be like, come out and be like, this is the best band from Britain. So I don't know. I got nothing. I've been like kind of mortified for the entire time the question's been asked.
I'm going to cheat a little bit and say it's not a band, but it's a musical act. And I'm going to go with Slick Rick.
Oh, there. Yeah.
Slick Rick, born in England. So Yeah, he's my favorite because I'm more of a rap guy. So I'm sure that there are a ton of great rock bands that you could, other people could probably list. I'm definitely not that guy. And here's, I'm just going to give that Vlad guy a shout because he asked a question. I have no goddamn clue. Since the Celtics are in the UK, which Celtics player would you throw into the Jordy Shore house to cause the most havoc with the girls?
I looked this up. I looked this up when this show was. It's like their version of the Jersey Shore. Yeah.
I mean,
located in like Nottingham or something, and it's just like basically trashy reality television. That's
the answer
hilarious.
Has to be Terry Rozier, no matter what. Like, cause the most havoc with the girls. The answer is automatically Terry Rozier.
Well, what about Kyrie Irving, man? He might just come in and just really spout some nonsense and like really confuse people. That's a real wild card. I feel like Kyrie Irving as a wild card play would be the most havoc long term.
I mean, if you're talking about emotional havoc or like,
yeah, I'm just talking about havoc general.
I think Rozier would be like, I mean, we've seen his Snapchats. It's just,
you know, I just said he had a winning personality. Believe me, it'll come across. I agree with you 100%.
At Vevmo, win or lose, do you think the London trip will cause difficulties going forward into the next block of games? Oh, this is a serious question.
That's I would say we're in junk mode. I don't think we have time for that. I don't think it's going to cause an issue.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I don't think. Yeah, I can't.
I think
sorry.
They have appropriate rest on both sides, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Okay, moving up. Kendall. I mean, I should save this for last, but I'll just do it now. Screw it. At Kendall JW, whose game resembles a young Corrales on the court, and what injury ended your should-have-been legendary career prematurely? I can't think of a good comp. Because the beginning of my career, I was a post player. So I studied a lot of McHale. I did a lot of drop steps. I did a lot of up and unders. I was, you know, working the Jack Sigma moves. I had all of that stuff down. Then I added a mid-range jumper. My game does not translate well to today's NBA.
No, game's done change from that.
I'm an old school guy. So I did a lot. Like I said, I did a lot in the post. And then when I was in college, when I moved from the 5 to the 4, I played off of my buddy Ken LaFlamme, who played the 5, but we both had similar games, and we could both hit from like 15 feet. I think my career shooting percentage was somewhere around 50%, so we could set picks for each other, read the defense, and either go curl to the post or curl up high and catch and shoot, or pass to each other. That's why I love the big man passing so much. And then, God damn it, if my best basketball didn't come probably 4 years after I was done playing like organized basketball, because by like 27, 28, I was just running the point in men's leagues. So it was like, you really hit a stride. Like all of a sudden at 20, 28 years old, I'm like, holy shit, my body's doing things I never knew it could do. And, you know, so... whatever. As far as the injury, when I was in Greece, I had a couple. And the first one was I tore my quad. Which,
oh, that sounds terrible.
It's not a good injury.
Ouch. Yeah. I'm just thinking about that right now, tearing your quad. Ew.
Yeah, I tore my quad. And how I tore my quad was because I'd actually strained it and I tried to come back too soon. And then just tore it. And then I came back from that and I hurt my back in an injury that still hasn't been completely explained to me. But all I know is I woke up one morning and it took me probably 2 hours to get out of bed. So that tells you
that's not good. Generally it's I'm a under 10 seconds kind of guy.
Yeah. Generally you like roll out of bed. Like the laying in bed, and this is where you know like all of the intricacies of how your body works. The mere firing of the fast twitch muscles required in your core to lift you out of bed caused an excruciating pain in my back. That was somehow disc and nerve related. It took a long time for me to get out of that. And contractually in Greece, a lot of international players have similar stories. I was at a very low level professional. Like, I was playing, like, if you watch the Balls play in Lithuania or wherever the hell they were playing, like, that shitty competition, it was basically kind of that level of competition. So I'm not putting any big things on what I was doing.
Did you see the Lithuanian refs wearing the big baller brand?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Jerseys? That was hilarious.
That was pretty funny. I have a funny ref story too. But so to end the injury thing, basically they stopped paying me. So, and I had no recourse because the money that they owed me was, I would have spent twice as much in courts for years trying to get that money back. And at that point, I was so frustrated. I had squeezed, honestly, every ounce of basketball out of my body. That's just how I was. Shit luck. My body is constructed as such that by 23 years old, I was done. I was dealing with tendonitis in both of my knees. I was dealing with, you know, an Achilles, you know, a sore Achilles that it was chronic. It sapped everything out of me. So at that point, I was done. I had rehabbed through two injuries. I was not getting my money. So that's it. That season was over and I left. And that's the end of my career. And I didn't have it in me to go through and try it again the following year, because I knew I was probably going to get hurt again and I was going to go through not getting paid again. And so I just said goodbye. The ref story, I remember I was on the bench hurt. And if you think the complaints of the refs today was bad, just multiply it by like 10. The refs were so bad, first of all, and the players were so pissed off at the just absolute horrific officiating that one of the officials left.
He just refused to continue.
He had enough. There were three officials. One of them had had enough of everybody's bitching, and he just quit. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. The other two referees went to talk to him, and he waved them off, and he walked into the back, and they just looked at each other and were like, all right, I guess it's just two of us now.
And we saw how that went with the recent Celtics game.
And that's that. I mean, it blew my mind. I'd never seen that before. But yeah, an official actually just up and goddamn left the court. So there you go. That's the answer to that. And now moving on. At Patty is sleepy. Pick a Celtic 2. Babysit your kids / watch your house. Back you up in a fight, and be on Jeopardy with.
Be on Jeopardy with is going to go with Jaylen Brown, just because he seems like the most well-read and guy who knows a little bit about everything. What are the other two? Babysitting and
babysit your kids / watch your house, and back you up in a fight.
I think I would choose Al Horford to watch my house and babysit my kids. He's just expecting his announced he's having his third kid. Congrats to Al and his wife. I don't know. He just feels like a very reasonable guy, a safe guy, always making the right choice. I don't know. I don't have kids, but that feels like the logical decision.
I would say so.
And then back me up in a fight.
Yeah.
Aaron Baines, Smart, Marcus Morris, Semi Ojeleye, any of them, any of the above. Like, they're just the strong boys. So, like, of course, I'm going to take any of them. They're all great fighters. I don't know. I can't choose between the strong boys.
So, I agree. I feel like those are – it's a great question, but I also feel like the answers are obvious. So,
yeah.
I definitely agree with Jaylen Brown. You go on Jeopardy with Jaylen Brown. Back you up in a fight. I mean, Marcus is absolutely crazy enough to back me up and do whatever it takes to win the fight. However, I also feel like he would unnecessarily escalate the fight. So, like, I don't want to fight anybody. So, not because I'm not about that life, because I just don't want to go to jail. I'm a big guy, and if I hit somebody, I just don't want to deal with the ramifications. So my instinct is to just back out of a fight. Like, look, I don't care what names you call me. My feelings aren't going to be hurt. You know, if you want to make yourself feel big, if it makes you feel like you've got a bigger dick, then fine. Say what you need to say and then run off and whatever. I don't care. I feel like I'd get to a point where the guy would just be like, fine, screw you. Call me a few names and leave. And Marcus Smart would just fly in off the top rope with a trash can and be like, all right.
So you really want Kyrie to back you up in the fight. So just like come in and really calm the situation down and get real heady.
I'm thinking somebody that would just confuse the hell out of him. Just
yeah, that's perfect.
All philosophical. And just be like, then we just walk off and whatever. Like that's I think, and it would be. So look, if the fight is happening and it's about to go down, it's Smart. But in my world, I would say realistically, I'm going to give a real answer. It's Kyrie. I think he'll be able to talk us out of it. Now,
I think Baines wins just because he's fucking tough. But
yeah, Baines would just like walk through and just people would be fighting him, and he wouldn't even realize that he's in the fight. He'd be like, what's going on down
there? He would just like hitting people.
Yeah. He was just like, oh, they're punching me. Okay, bam, 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 done. To babysit my kids, I'm going to cheat and say Brad Stevens. So,
oh, good one.
Because
he would have him watch him film so quickly.
Right. Like, he's not just a babysitter. He's like their life coach. Like, these kids, I feel like I'd come home and want my kids to adopt me with all of the knowledge that they've absorbed from Brad Stevens. And Al Horford's a great choice. I mean, you can leave for a week and come back, and everything's going to be in order. Every dish is going to be cleaned. Your kids are going to be the most behaved they've ever been. But I think Brad Stevens is like going to be a better dad than I am. So I just kind of want to expose them to that level of male leadership. So at least they've experienced it once in their life.
Yeah, that's fair. A leader like Brad Stevens is just something, not an opportunity you get.
Now, kids, I know you love daddy, but Uncle Brad's much better at everything than daddy. So listen to him for a little while and then tell me what he tells you.
Write everything down.
Pass along the knowledge, please. Here's a recorder. Just leave it on in your pocket. Don't let him know. Which is why I'm
Brad
the bad
would be
dad.
So upset if you abandoned his trust like that.
That's exactly why I'm not a good dad. I'm sitting here surreptitiously trying to steal his knowledge, and he's just like, he's got the betterment of the team, and I'm just like, no, more for me, better for me. All right. This is another question here. Can you please pick 1 to 5 the worst overseas players you've seen play for the Celtics? There's a two-parter from Mauricio. I didn't even see the second part. Worst international player or worst overseas player? Please. I mean, don't make me say it.
Fab Melo, RIP?
Yeah. I mean, come on.
He was pretty bad.
He's from South America. It's technically you could drive there, but I guess. But
he was, in fact, not good.
He was not good. I'm sorry. I hate to say that about Fab. But
I have a Fab Melo jersey t-shirt. Now my brother got it for me as a goof because he was so bad, but now I wear it in his honor.
Yeah. Hey, I spotted Fab Melo randomly at Rockefeller Center in New York City. I was like, holy shit, Fab! He looked around, I was like, huh? Got a picture with him. It's on my Instagram.
I bet the 7-foot Brazilian man did stand out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Very easy to pick. I saw him from like 2 blocks away. here's the other question. Boston Sports. Yeah, I gave him the shout out. Who do you think had the best and worst British accents in the video? So just want to make sure I shouted that out. Let's see. At Jack Michael 17, rank the Celtics in terms of their ability to get one of the Royal Guards with the poofy hats to move like in the movies. And we're talking about make them laugh, scare them, whatever.
My first thought was Kyrie Irving. Just because he'll be out there and he can do some real casual fancy dribbling moves that may kind of scare him. I don't know. That was just my first thing. He's like, he's going to come at them with some nonsense that they were not prepared for because they're used to this. People are going after them all the time trying to break them. So you have to try something unconventional. If I'm going unconventional, I'm going Kyrie Irving.
I'm again going to cheat a little bit and I'm going to say it's Danny Ainge.
Ooh.
And it's Danny Ainge by calling the British Royal Guard and informing him that he has been traded to the Pontifical Swiss Guard and he's got to go to the Vatican to protect the Pope and he's going to be very pissed off and he's just going to at that point, you're so flustered, you have to move. And while the Pontifical Swiss Guard have a real cushy gig, they got to wear very goofy jester-looking uniforms. And I don't know if you've seen that, but
this guy's plenty used to like looking like a jester, though. But I mean, those uniforms aren't cool.
Okay, the big eraser hat is a little tough, but the rest of it is very proper. A red jacket, black pants, a little sash. It's you know, there's you got to have good balance to keep the hat, but it's not horrible. The Pope's guards are wearing like, I guess in the ceremonial guard world, they're the equivalent of the ugly Cleveland Cavaliers alternative jerseys, but it's not good. They look like the Joker in a deck of cards. They really do. So
I don't know. That sounds like maybe it might be an upgrade. The only other thing I thought about was maybe Marcus Smart, just because how many charges would he take against a member of the Royal Guard? Glenn?
I feel like
it would frustrate them so much. I feel like if it just being a pest and just really being annoying and impacting winning like Marcus Smart does, it's hard to pick against him.
I feel like there's a point there to be made that they might actually feel like the palace is under attack. So they might feel compelled to move to protect the queen. So that's, I'm not really answering the question as far as ranking.
No, ranking is too difficult of a task.
I can't.
Just to do the thought exercise of imagining different members is exhausting.
Yeah. I guess. And I can't think of anybody else that would actually, I mean. No.
Jason Tatum is a murderer, apparently. So maybe they might be scared of him.
Jay got so much shit for that.
I know. It's funny.
All right. And I think we're going to wrap it up here with the life of Cahill. 10 years from now, who do you think will be better overall? Tatum or Brown? This is a Rain and Jay's question.
And the Tatum. Tatum.
Yeah, Tatum. I can't. Tatum.
Tatum. He has no flaws. He is Tatum. The perfect man child.
Right. The murderer is going to. He can be a top 10 guy in the league. Jaylen Brown will not probably be a top 10 guy in the league, but he'll be pretty damn good too.
I think Jaylen Brown can be a really damn good defender and with his athleticism, but I just don't. He's not as polished offensively as Jason Tatum is at this point. So. Okay.
Add Andy Cahill to the list of people who asked about the Learn to Speak British video about the Suns. That's the one thing everybody wants to know about. They want our hot takes on that British Learn to Speak British video.
My hot take is Al Horford had a terrible British accent.
Bad. It was so bad.
But he has gorgeous eyes.
It's the one thing. We finally found the thing that
flaw.
He can't do. You put a gun to his head and say, speak in a British accent or die. He's gone. Forget it. It's the one thing he can't even get close to doing right. So, all right, everybody. Thanks for all of the hashtags. We came into today thinking we have nothing to talk about, and we just spent an hour talking about all sorts of things. So we want to thank you for that, and thank you for going to draft.com. Our friends over there, our sponsors, our regular sponsors, you should go hook them up and check it out. Because like I said, it's $100 guarantee up to $100 money back. If you're not satisfied, if you've had a problem with it, go talk to them in their customer service. So download the Draft app, go to draft.com and sign up. Use the promo code LO Celtics. You get free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit with the promo code LO Celtics on the Draft app or draft.com. Of course, if you are a subscriber to this show, we ask you kindly to give us a 5-star rating, share the podcast, or leave a good review. Let people know that they should be listening to us like you listen to us regularly. If you're not a subscriber, please do so. Please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Search for Locked On Celtics or, hey, any other of your Locked On shows. If you're a fan of other teams or want to listen to some of what our opponents are saying, there's a Locked On podcast for every NBA team. If you're a football fan, you want to get your team's take on whatever playoff teams are remaining, including the New England Patriots, go to Locked On and your whatever your favorite NFL team is. Locked On Patriots is a good show. Check them out and check us out tomorrow. We'll have Anna Horford, I think. Hopefully that all pans out. So check it out. Check me out on her podcast, Horford Happy Hour. And that's it. Talk to you later here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.